Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A year ago today, Columbus Crew owner Anthony Precourt announced his plan to move the team to Austin. Today, Major League Soccer continues to work out the details of another plan to keep the Crew in Columbus. But it's not a done deal yet. Joining us is the athletic reporter covering the Crew, Andrew King. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Happy to be here.
I read a line from one of your articles that said, for the first time in modern sports history, a grassroots movement by fans prevented a team from leaving the city. And I wondered, is that really a thing?
I mean, there aren't really any other examples of it. I mean, you think of recent history with like the Seattle Supersonics or the Raiders twice or the St. Louis Rams twice. And it doesn't really ever happen. Once those gears get grinding, it doesn't seem to stop. So that's kind of the oddest thing about all of this, is that there's not really necessarily precedent for it.
Do you, from covering the issue, give the fans credit for at least partial credit for turning this around, so to speak?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think if fans had a more muted response when this all began, I don't think we'd be here. You always have to go back to the business of the whole thing. And a lot of what they focused on was proving, if you will, that there is a business to be had here, that there is a viable, solution to solving some of the business problems, if you will. And so I think that group really laying everything out was an important part.
What is absolutely known about this deal so far?
Not too much, to be honest with you. It was a lot of reporting on Friday that said, things are close. And then it was a couple of vague statements from the league and from the Browns and from, the groups involved. So, while we don't have anything super concrete yet, I think we're mostly to the point where none of those statements are happening, if something isn't at least, on its way.
What about the timing? Why that timing when things are still vague? Why not wait until they're etched in stone?
Well, I think it started to get to the point where there were more people involved or aware than maybe in previous weeks. And I think once the Save the Crew group went out and said it's done, I think it kind of forced some hands to make at least a comment, when maybe the league or the team or the Haslams may have preferred to wait until, a stadium was figured out to announce, or a couple other things were in place. I think it got to the point where they realized they had to say something.
Jimmy and Dee Haslam, who own the Cleveland Browns, are part of the investor group that's looking at buying it. How did they get involved? What do you know about the connection there?
I don't know exactly how they got involved, but I do know that the Haslams have had their eye on Columbus. I mean, they tried to bring, or at least seemed to want to bring, Browns training camp here a few years ago, you'll remember. And it just kind of makes sense for them to make some inroads down here in what is a relatively cheaper market as opposed to the NFL. So from a business standpoint for them, it kind of makes sense. And it kind of makes me wonder why nobody brought them up earlier, because they weren't really a name that had been, speculated about before.
Well, I think people were looking in town and this was out of town, but they are from Nashville. He is brother to the governor of Tennessee. And I'm wondering, Nashville's getting one of the expansion teams?
Right.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if that kind of got them interested.
It's very possible. Nashville's been cool to watch. They've been one of the expansion sides that has really shown that they deserved it, if you will. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these places do. But they had kind of a cool story and kind of a cool fan base. So if he was around there and seeing any of that, it very well may have helped them get interested at the very least.
The Haslam family released a statement saying they're hopeful to be part of a solution. So that's not solid.
Sure.
What do you think a team like the Jackets? It's hockey season for me. What do you think a team like the Crew goes for these days?
It's really hard to say, because there have been all these reports about numbers that Anthony Precourt turned down, but we don't know exactly what all those meant.
Before.
Right. Before this one. Mm-hmm. Back when he was first talking about selling the team or moving.
But now Major League Soccer is talking about an expansion team in Austin, so Anthony Precourt could get his cake and eat it too.
Yeah. There's going to be some sort of weird thing that happens with this that doesn't necessarily make sense to the teams that want an expansion team, or the cities, I should say, that want an expansion team. The expansion fee is at, I think, $150 million. And I can't imagine that it's going to be a situation where someone's going to pay $150 million and the price of the full team, Precourt included. So I think what's going to happen is MLS is probably going to wind up just saying, okay, we'll waive part of the fee, or we'll change some structure around to allow you to not pay the full expansion fee in either city.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Columbus crew. It looks like they're probably going to stay in Columbus. It's not absolutely finalized yet. My guest is Andrew King. He covers soccer for The Athletic. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear from fans. What do you think? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I wanted to return to the fans for a minute. Your October 12 article quoted a fan, one of the Save the Crew leaders, mm-hmm. who said the movement was bigger even than Columbus, that fans in other markets also opposed the Austin plan. What's going on there?
Well, one of their biggest messages from the beginning was, if it can happen here, it can happen anywhere, which I think is a message that resonates pretty well. I mean, cities across the country have dealt with other teams moving, you know, in other leagues. So nobody's a stranger to that concept. But the fact that the Crew were the first team in the league, have plenty of history here. You know, maybe they're not the biggest market or the best, you know, quote unquote business metrics over the last 5 years or whatever, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I think that they got a lot of support from fans, in particular of the older original teams who realize that once this bump of being a new team goes away, you're not getting, you know, sold out stadiums every single week. So as soon as a team slips into the spot where they're not selling every single ticket each week, they look at themselves and say, oh, well, maybe this is us too. And if we don't put up a fight or at least show our support for this movement, MLS may seem to them that, you know, you can just move a team with no resistance.
So in that case that you reported in that article, they had a Save the Crew sign. This was back in the day, almost a year ago, I guess. It was last season, I think. Maybe it was the beginning of this season. And somebody bought the sign in Atlanta?
Oh, yeah. That was the playoff game last year.
That's right.
It was Atlanta United's first playoff home game, first playoff game, period. They were an expansion team. Somebody, I guess, bought their Save the Crew sign and, like, led their march to the stadium with it.
But they were worried that maybe...
They thought they were just trying to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, I know they've gotten teams in the UK, I think England and, like, Scotland or whatever, to hold up Save the Crew banners, like, at their home games. Because fans in other countries have no concept of what this even means, because teams just don't move like that. There's one example I can think of in England in recent times, and it was like the biggest catastrophe ever. So they have a whole different perspective, and a lot of them got on board pretty quickly.
And is Columbus Crew better known than other teams because it was the first?
I don't know if I would say that necessarily. Maybe if you asked someone in their 40s or 50s.
An old person? Is that what you're saying?
No. Someone who's not recently gotten into the league, I will say. Because now there's the headliners like Seattle or Atlanta who are making, you know, bigger player signings and making bigger splashes.
Bigger cities.
Right, exactly. Bigger markets. So I don't know if they would necessarily be the first name to come up, but there's so many more opportunities for them to have heard the name Columbus Crew before, just from some of the players that they've had, some of the games they've played in, the national team stuff that they've hosted. So they're pretty widely known.
There's going to be a new stadium if the Crew stays.
Supposedly.
It's supposedly supposed to move downtown. Right. What are the metrics of that? Who pays for that?
I don't think we really know that much at all at this point. I think the city of Columbus has at least partially made it clear that they're not going to just roll over and give them all the money or anything. But I think that's where some of the local ownership of this deal, the alleged local ownership of this deal, comes into play.
That's right. Besides the Haslams, there's another group.
The Edwards family is supposed to be involved. That is the team doctor, but also he is part of the Edwards family, I believe. This is a kind of a confusing situation because there's two Pete Edwards involved that helped develop like Tuttle Mall and the Brewery District.
Right.
So they understand how to get developments done. And we've also heard Nationwide, I believe, come out in the last couple of days and say they're open to the idea.
Nationwide Realty, right.
Right, of selling some of that land to the Crew. So that's probably the part that we know the least about, is just how all those mechanisms come into place.
Having the stadium downtown in the Arena District, does that make sense from where you sit, just covering soccer around the country? Is that kind of typical?
I think, I don't know if I would quite call it typical yet. I think that Major League Soccer would prefer that it were typical. And I think just knowing the city pretty well, I think it would make a lot of sense to put it down there. I think people have enjoyed having the Clippers down there, having the Blue Jackets down there. It's kind of nice to have it be like a destination place. Mm-hmm. And while the situation at current Moffray Stadium isn't dire or anything, I think people would agree that there's not as much, you know, walk-up attendance, and there's not as many bars around and things like that. And
right.
You can't kind of make an evening out of it without getting into your car and driving somewhere else. So I think that's kind of the main draw of moving it somewhere like downtown.
And no matter what, meanwhile, back at the ranch, they can keep using Moffray
right.
until something new is built.
Yeah, sure. Because obviously it's the oldest stadium in the league because it was the first one that was built. But it's certainly not beyond repair. I mean, the Precourt ownership group has kind of let things get a little ugly in there in some places, but it's nothing that a few, you know, workers can't fix.
You know, I don't know if it was you or someone else I was reading who's talking about the blunders, Precourt blunders,
yeah.
And you know, the fans forgave him a lot,
sure,
until they thought, well, wait a minute, are these on purpose?
Yeah, I mean, it was a matter of when he was saying all the right things, when he was saying, you know, it's ridiculous for people to be concerned that I would move the team. And he really said things just as blatant as that. You know, I was like, okay, well, he's a new owner. He's still trying to figure things out. Like, maybe he just made a mistake here. But as it goes along, whether it's true or not, and I think there are probably only a few people who know for sure, it sure starts to look like either he didn't care or he wanted fans to not show up.
What are the players saying?
The players, I think, are relieved. I think they're still kind of the players that I've heard are mostly still kind of waiting until something is actually official and there's like a real release from the team and everything, which is understandable because that's their future. So I think for the most part they're cautiously optimistic. I don't think any of them want to have their lives totally uprooted and moved to Austin. But at the same time, they're professional athletes and they're used to moving, a lot of them. So,
right.
And I think it depends on where they come from. I mean, a guy like Will Trapp, who's from here, probably feels a lot different than, you know, someone who came from another country or someone who came from, California or something like that.
And finally, is there any kind of sense of a timeline here? Have they said in the next couple months, in the next month? What?
They have not set a timeline, but I think just in terms of what makes sense, I think probably the next couple of months makes the most sense. I don't think they can. I don't think anyone wants to drag this into next season. And there may be a new coach to hire. There's going to be a new roster to build. There's going to be a lot of logistics that need to take place in terms of re-signing players and stuff like that. And I can't imagine that a, you know, lame duck ownership group, if you will, wants to be making those decisions any more than the new ownership group wants them to be making those decisions.
What are you expecting this at the final game of the season this week?
I think it's going to be great. I can imagine that. I mean, I know for a fact that there are some Crew fans who the day Precourt said he wanted to move the team stopped paying any attention at all to the Crew. Then I had a friend who was one of the bigger soccer fans that I know text me the other day and say, okay, so what do I need to know about the Crew? Because I haven't paid any attention at all this season and now I am.
Isn't that part of the problem?
Kind of, but at the same time, I can understand people like that because they really felt like it was an inevitability and that they were, you know, they were just giving money to Precourt that was going to be used for Austin. But now I think a lot of those people are back. And so I think the final home game will be a pretty cool moment to get some people back who might have been gone, to get some people back who might never have gotten involved in the first place because they thought there was no point because they didn't want to get invested in a team who was going to leave. So I think it should be a pretty cool atmosphere.
We're talking about the Crew. The Columbus Crew probably is staying in Columbus at this point. We're not absolutely sure, but we do know that Jimmy and Dee Haslam, who own the Cleveland Browns, are part of the investor group interested in buying the team. My guest is Andrew King. He's a reporter for The Athletic. He covers soccer. He's going to stay with us this hour. Coming up, we're going to talk more about the economy, you know, the economics of professional sports and as they play out with a soccer team or soccer club like the Crew. And we'll also be hearing from a reporter out of Austin about how people there are responding to this. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus Crew owner Anthony Precourt has spent the last year working on plans to move the club to Austin. Everything appeared to change last week when Cleveland Browns owners Jimmy and Dee Haslam issued a statement that they were hopeful to be a part of a plan to keep the Crew in Columbus. But the future's still a bit blurry. We're talking about the details today, as much as we know of them. Still with us is the athletic reporter who covers soccer, Andrew King. And joining us by phone is sports economist at the College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts, Victor Matheson. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me.
A lot has changed in a year. What does this mean to Columbus economically if the Crew stays here? I mean, I suppose typically, what does it mean?
Well, so usually we actually don't have a particularly large economic impact. The way the Columbus Crew would be felt by the city of Columbus if they moved is mainly very sad soccer fans and very sad sports fans. The actual dollars and cents would not have been much. The real question going forward, however, is how much is it going to cost to keep the Crew long term? Because in all of these deals that we've been talking about here for the last week or so, most of these are preconditioned on the Crew getting a new stadium somewhere. And of course, as we know, the Crew had this first soccer-specific stadium in the United States, but it's a pretty bare-bones thing. It was about a $30 million stadium. Compare that to the new Audi Stadium that DC United just opened up this summer. That's at least a $300 million stadium, and some estimates have that as much as maybe $450 million. So this is something, you know, we're talking about a stadium that's 10 or 15 times as expensive as that kind of bare bones, but, you know, kind of that seminal stadium that Columbus put up 20 years ago.
Yeah, 20 years ago, there probably wasn't as much money spread around, but it looks like there is this supposition that there's going to be a new stadium. And so that's just automatically a boost to the economy, isn't it, if it does get built?
Well, so the question is where that money comes from, right? If that's private money coming in to build a new stadium, there's no economist in the United States who would argue with that being a good thing for Columbus, right? These are private individuals building basically a factory that will employ a handful of people and you know, supply entertainment to local Columbus folks. No one would argue with that at all. However, most economists are actually very critical of putting taxpayer money, or at least any sort of significant taxpayer money, into stadiums, because we've very, very rarely seen any sort of large citywide boost in economic activity when teams build either new soccer stadiums or downtown minor league baseball stadiums or NHL stadiums, just to name a few that you have there in Columbus.
How do we know how much a city the size of Columbus can support? So we've got the Buckeyes, we've got the Columbus Blue Jackets, we've got the Columbus Crew. We've got Huntington. I mean, we've got the Huntington Park and the Clippers minor league.
Right. So the big factors here, obviously, are, you know, what's the size of your population, how wealthy is your population, and what sort of other cities are nearby. So, for example, Columbus is not much bigger than Providence, Rhode Island, and not much richer. But Providence, of course, has none of these major league teams, simply because they're too close to Boston.
Okay.
So Columbus has that. It kind of, you know, is its own, you know, center of the universe for, you know, 100 miles in almost any direction, a couple hundred miles in every direction. That's helpful. It's also one of the richer large cities in Ohio, obviously. And, you know, the reason the Columbus Crew located there in the first place is when they located there, they were one of the largest cities in the United States without any other professional franchises. And Major League Soccer is very, very specifically kind of going after cities that don't have other Major League franchises, and particularly they find places without other summer sports attractive. So the fact that you don't have a Major League baseball team, and, of course, the Buckeyes are all playing through the fall and winter for all their sports, makes Columbus fairly attractive in some ways. It's not a sexy city like Austin. So, you know, you could kind of
Well, you
got to
visit here, Victor.
Oh, no. Now, mind you, I have been to Columbus, and I love the city. It's a fantastic city. But, yeah, again, nationwide, let's all be honest. It doesn't have, you know, kind of the sexy appeal that, South by Southwest Austin does, or Vegas or something like this. But you know, it's attractive from the fact that it is the fastest growing of the big cities in Ohio, and it's this kind of large independent city without other things to do in the summer. So that's a nice feature. But again, you're talking about potentially hundreds of millions of dollars. If that comes out of private pockets, no one's going to complain about that. The real question Columbus is going to have to face as a city is how much money are we as a city going to put in, into this private venture to keep the crew here.
Which usually comes in the form of tax credits, that kind of a thing.
It can come in a whole variety of ways. Obviously, you already have a situation where you have a problematic relationship with the city having to bail out the Blue Jackets and their stadium. Of course, the revenue streams that had been dedicated, that had been generated, that were supposed to build that stadium did not come through in the way they had hoped. That was going to be some casino money that didn't come through as they hoped. The question is, how much money does a city like Columbus want to spend to keep professional soccer? What we've seen for the last 10 years or so is that roughly a third of money to build new stadiums in Major League Soccer and the other big sports has come from the public, and two-thirds has come from private. For a $300 million stadium, that still means Columbus coming up with $100 million.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about plans afoot to keep the crew in Columbus. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Right now, we're talking with Victor Matheson by phone. He's a sports economist at the College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts. And also with us, Andrew King. He covers soccer for The Athletic. Andrew King, it feels like for me and a lot of people that it was always sort of an either or proposition. The crew wasn't welcomed by some people because they thought it would take a cut from the Blue Jackets.
Sure. I think maybe some people felt that way. Their seasons don't overlap too much. I mean, there is some overlap, but I think they can definitely both work at once. And I mean, I think a lot of these other cities where MLS is doing really well, it's happening right alongside a pro sports team. I mean, you've got Portland. When Portland's kind of a unique scenario because they really, really love soccer, but they've got the Trailblazers. They've got all sorts of other stuff there. You've got Seattle. They've been historically one of the most successful.
Atlanta,
and they've got lots of other sports. Atlanta is the newest one.
So, Victor Matheson, has that equation about moving to a town where there a big enough town where there isn't another major league sport, is that changing now? Obviously.
So I think a little bit, but if we look at if you look at the most recent expansion franchises, so we have a second team in Los Angeles. That's obviously completely the opposite, right? So put a bunch of franchises in your really big cities. But the other ones are Cincinnati's coming online in 2019, and Nashville's coming in 2020. Those are very specifically places. Again, not a ton necessarily else going on there.
Cincinnati Bengals, the Cincinnati Reds.
I wasn't counting the Bengals as a professional franchise.
Oh, man, if a certain friend of mine's listening right now.
Trying to locate yourself. And to tell you the truth, if you think about just how spectacular the Northwest United States has done with soccer, with Seattle and Vancouver, obviously in Canada there, and Portland, you know, maybe this is the sort of thing that could really generate that same sort of, local rivalry, with Columbus and Cincinnati and Nashville, you know, kind of all here in the same area. That might be the... having a team in Cincinnati might be really something that kind of drives a rivalry and, is actually good for both franchises to keep Columbus local.
Yeah. Does that make sense, Andrew King?
I think so. I think that rivalry is going to be really, really cool. To go back to the $300 million number that keeps getting tossed around, I think that might be a little high for here. I think you have to consider the fact that D.C. land is going to cost a lot more than Columbus land, partially. But also, there have been stadiums built recently that aren't $300 million. I mean, in 2017, Orlando opened theirs. That was $150 million. Mm-hmm. The one in L.A. was $350 plus. But I think they can get this thing done a little cheaper than $300 million.
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair point. Minneapolis is opening their new stadium here next season, and that's about a $200 million stadium. So, yeah, we've seen them go up into the $300-400 million range, but we've also seen moderately recent ones coming in around 180, 200. So, you know, you want to be a little frugal probably if you are Columbus, kind of depending on how deep of pockets both local businesses are, as well as the hassles about how much they want to spend on that stadium and how much, again, the local community thinks taxpayer money should be directed there rather than other local needs.
Deborah in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I think it's a shame that the people behind the scenes are trying to force Columbus residents and maybe outsiders as well to pay through taxpayer dollars for professional teams. I've voted 3 times in the past to not support an arena. They snuck up on us different ways. We all know how that happened. Now there are all people who are too young to appreciate what happened back in the 80s and 90s. They're trying to say, oh, yeah, we want the crew to come in town. But guess what? The unspoken thing is the leaders in the community have all gotten together behind the scenes to say, okay, we'll pretend that these big, wealthy families are going to support it. But guess what? We could sneak in some taxpayer dollars to try to convince people who don't know differently that they should pay the taxpayer dollars, and that's wrong. If it's professional teams, they need to support themselves or go. We can't support that.
Okay. I know you're not alone, Deborah, in that sentiment. Andrew King, any inkling that the city is finagling something behind the scenes?
I don't think there's very many people who know at this point. I think the Save the Crew folks have tried their best to say we're trying to do this without public mm-hmm. money, because I think
They know the history.
And I think just in general, the tide has kind of turned on that over the last few years. I think there have been enough studies and, you know, research done that shows that it really isn't the return on investment that, you know, some cities have tried to claim that it will be, or teams, I should say, have tried to claim that it will be. So I think in general, we have a more skeptical public to deals like that at this point.
You know, Victor Matheson, what about what this looks like to the likes of Amazon, which, you know, has named Columbus as one of the top 20 contenders for that new Amazon 2.0 situation?
Yeah, so that's a good point. So let's just talk a little bit about the context of the economic impact of teams.
Yeah.
The direct economic impact of teams is extremely small, and we've seen study after study that shows that put a new team in a city, put a new stadium in a city, put a big event like an MLS Cup in a city or a Super Bowl, things like this. These are just very, very small economic drivers for local economic development. However, if you kind of maybe go one step further and say, well, maybe it's not the actual dollars and cents that are spent at the stadium that is so great for the economy, but the fact that the soccer team is an amenity that keeps educated people in Columbus when they graduate from Ohio State, attracts businesses for that like the climate where we have a vibrant city with lots of things to do, makes it easy to hire people. I think that's actually a somewhat more compelling argument because, you know, at least on the first line, that they actually directly benefit economies. We just have almost no evidence on that. But that's at least a reasonable point. And we have some evidence, for example, some early studies suggested that cities with NFL teams, for example, had higher rents because than cities without, because the argument goes people are more willing to pay for places, to live in places that have a lot of exciting things to do.
But
I don't know that that's 100% correct, but I think that at least has, at least a kernel of truth there.
Yeah, it's the cachet factor.
Yeah, exactly right.
We have an email from someone who they're asking what's to stop the Crew moving to Tennessee if acquired by the Browns organization.
Well, first of all, there's there's another team that is already...
That's already in the works. Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be surprising. But secondly, it's kind of hard to tell in the moment because we don't get to look at the contracts and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But there's been a lot of reporting that at the time that Anthony Precourt bought the team, the owners said, you can't move the team anywhere except Austin because that's the one that he particularly wanted. So mm-hmm. I would be surprised if out of all of this... if the Haslams decided to make a similar, you know, clause in their contract. And at this point, with talk of the stadium and stuff like that, that doesn't seem likely. I mean, I guess technically it could happen, but it seems like one of the least likely outcomes at this point.
The city of Columbus tried suing Precourt Ventures and Major League Soccer over the potential move to Austin.
Right.
What's the status of that?
I don't think anybody knows exactly how this affects that. I mean, if the team stays and goes to new ownership, I think that's exactly what that law, you know, wanted to have happen. But I think that lawsuit was maybe not the decider, but I think it was one of multiple things that didn't go the way Precourt wanted it to go.
Mm-hmm.
That helped contribute to at least slowing things down long enough to get a deal, you know, in the works.
And Victor Matheson, before I let you go, you know, everybody's real revved up about this. I imagine it's going to be a packed stadium at the last game this week. What do we know about the sustainability of that kind of enthusiasm?
Yeah, so the Save the Crew folks have done a very good job trying to revive some interest and trying to say, hey, You're not going to know what you've lost until it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So let's make sure that doesn't happen. And there's been significant renewed corporate interest. So I think Columbus will have a pretty good season next year in terms of that. Whether it's good multiple years down the line is a real question. And you know, they are competing against other markets across the United States with, again, you know, much fancier stadiums,
mm-hmm.
in neighborhoods that are much more exciting to be able to walk from the bars and the restaurants right into the stadium, and of course luxury box revenues that are available in other places that aren't available for the Crew's current stadium. So, you know, I think this certainly looks like it solves the Crew's problems for several years. But it probably doesn't solve the Crew's problems for a long term, and hopefully we see some private money come in and you know, either upgrade the stadium, which I think would be difficult, or
yeah.
build a new stadium in the local area. And again, hopefully, and you know, I'm in agreement with Deborah there, your caller, that hopefully this doesn't involve huge amounts of taxpayer money, because again, we just don't have great evidence that is a good investment for local cities.
Victor Matheson, thanks as always for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Victor Matheson is a sports economist at the College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts. More on the Crew coming up on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A year ago today, Columbus Crew owner Anthony Precourt announced he planned to move the team to Austin. Now, that's not so obvious that it'll be happening. Major League Soccer announced last week that a major investor group is in discussions to purchase the Crew and keep them in Central Ohio. Deal isn't done yet, though. Still with us is reporter for The Atlantic covering soccer, Andrew King. Joining us as well is the leader of the local Save the Crew movement, Morgan Hughes. Welcome back, Morgan.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me back.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And by phone, we have the editor for Curbed Austin, Sydney Widener, who's been covering this story. Welcome to the show, Cindy.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, what are people saying in Austin about this?
People are feeling like it's a win-win-win, as our mayor put it, because there is apparently something happening with a different MLS team approved by MLS that is going to play in this hypothetical stadium that hasn't been built. So,
right.
so no one is, people are fine with it. The soccer fans are fine with it. There's another contingent of people that, don't hate soccer, but are concerned about the specifics of the stadium and its cost.
Right. Whatever team does make it to Austin, it won't be for a few years too, right?
Well, maybe. The local daily quoted a source, an unnamed source on it, who said it could be sooner than that. If it were going to be the crew being moved here, they were going to try to get them playing by next season. I'm not a big soccer person. I'm more of a buildings person, so I don't know when the season starts, but or if it's already happening.
It's just about ending, but yep.
Okay. So, the source says that a 2019 launch has not been ruled out yet.
Okay.
The thing is that there's sort of stadiums or places to play galore here right now. In addition to a field called House Park, where the USL team played the Austin Aztecs, there's a Formula One racing facility that's also sort of a general events facility, and they have built a sort of multi-purpose field, and they have a USL team playing there now. So that would probably be where that was where they were talking about playing if it were going to be the crew or the renamed crew or however.
Okay, whatever it's called.
Right.
I need to correct myself on two things. Andrew King is with the Athletic, not the Atlantic.
Right, right. Okay.
And also I've been saying that the next crew game is this week. It's next week. I got my weeks mixed up next week. So for everyone listening, I don't know if there's tickets available or not. Morgan Hughes.
The next crew game is this Sunday, but we're at Orlando. The next home game is October 28th against Minnesota United.
Right, right. So tell me how, we've heard about fans hitting the bars and celebrating and toasting and all of that kind of stuff. So you're pretty confident that this is a thing.
Well, all I can do is look at the statements that have been released by Major League Soccer, by, Precourt Sports Ventures, by the all of the parties that are involved in this saying, we're now committed to keeping the team here. We're, just signing, crossing the T's, dotting lowercase J's and waiting for the ink to dry. And, that looks good to me. We're really excited. We know that, even when it's announced, the crew is here for good. In some formal ceremony where Don Garber's holding a crew scarf, we know the work isn't done. We still have a lot of work to do to make sure that this team is woven deeply into the fabric of this community, not just now, but for ages to come.
And ages to come, there is the issue of the stadium. We had a caller come on and say they don't want any public funding for it. What is your sense about that?
Well, the great thing about the Save the Crew movement is while, what we do keeps us extraordinarily busy, one of the things we don't do is build and fund stadiums. That is left to the people who are going to buy the team and the people who do that kind of stuff. So, we get to be blissfully not worried about that, and cross bridges when you come to them. We're not there yet. We have a game on Sunday. We have a ticket drive going right now still on SaveTheCrew.com. So we don't, stadium funding is not my thing.
What's a ticket drive?
So if you go to SaveTheCrew.com, we are doing a ticket pledge so that when new ownership finally takes over, we can allow them to hit the ground running as best we can as a movement with, contact information for people that say we will buy tickets once it's, once the ink is dry. It's over 12,000 right now, and we are still promoting that, taking information. So go there, sign up, and let's make this thing as strong as possible.
And you're talking about season tickets.
Season tickets, multiple game packages, anything in between.
We talked about earlier in the program the role that the Save the Crew group had in all of this, and that it's the first time ever a grassroots movement has stopped the wheels turning away. What do you think it was about your group? What do you think you did differently maybe than other grassroots organizations?
The people. The people are the victors here, whether it's somebody that's helped out with Save the Crew, whether it's new ownership, whether it's just residents of Columbus or fans of soccer around the world. You know, the real lesson here is that when the people stand up and say, you know, we shall not be destroyed, you cannot do this to us, we can do anything. We can change the world, and we just got to do it together. And that's the real lesson here. We said we had some early victories, and we had a message that was relatable and honest, and we repeated it until, you know, people probably got tired of hearing this is not over. Tell everyone you know.
What were your early victories?
You know, we had a decision day, which was, I guess, it was going to be a year ago this Sunday, all around the league. There were, 11 home games. There were Save the Crew signs in each, you know, stadium. Every supporter group banded together behind us. You know, there were 1,000 things that happened in the early days, in the early hours, that just kind of blew me away, blew us away, and told the powers that be that not only is this not over right now, we're not going to stop until our team is saved and our community is not destroyed.
Cindy Widener, are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
I cut out, and I wanted to say something because there's something going on. My phone keeps cutting out. So.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
While I'm here, if you want to ask me.
Okay. Was there a sense of, like, kind of people feeling bad in Austin that they were taking this team away from Columbus?
Yes, I think it was a little, there was certainly no glee about it. There was a lot of excitement about having a soccer team. One of our council members, who actually also is not crazy about the stadium, actually traveled to Columbus. I don't know if she spoke to you, Save the Crew, but she wanted, she was against the stadium, kind of, or had questions anyway, but, you know, to talk to them about what it meant to take the team away. And I did not see a lot of social media or anything, you know, that was happy about that particular. It was more like people were kind of not thinking about it, didn't want to think about, you know, that impact. And we're very happy when it emerged that the crew was, you know, that this deal was in the works to keep the crew in Columbus, and it didn't mean we weren't going to get a team.
Now, there are questions and concerns in Austin about spending a ton of money, particularly public money, on a new stadium, right?
There are concerns. It's not like, I would say, a typical stadium in the sense that there's not any bond money or anything like that. The mm-hmm. big contribution that the city has is it's on city land. Precourt is going to pay for building it, and pay rent after it's built. However, they're not going to pay property taxes.
Mm-hmm. Forever?
The deal's not done, obviously, but yes. I think the whole point of kind of getting the stadium deal had something to do. This is just a theory mm-hmm. with trying to get the crew here, but forever. They will pay rent. They will, and then there's some transportation infrastructure that needs to go there. They want to get a rail stop there. It's about 10 miles from downtown, which is not their first choice.
Yeah.
And you know, other costs that are related that they'll. Company will pay into capital maintenance and that kind of thing. After that, I'll kick in after a few years. So it's not a lot of tax money going to the stadium or bond money. It's not getting any tax revenue.
It's foregone
from
revenue.
That land.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So yes, there are people that are very upset about that, including people in the council who, you know, want to see that land developed because now it's practically Central Austin. because Austin has been booming so much, mm-hmm. but want to see other aspects, you know, see other proposals for different kinds of development.
It's interesting. It's hard to believe, Andrew King, that there is the property available in downtown Columbus now.
Right.
It's like all that's left.
Yeah, it's that, and then there's the Franklinton idea, and those are pretty
right.
much, you know, if you're trying to get it really close to downtown, that's pretty much all that's left. There was some talk of some space, like, over, like, on the other side of Nationwide.
Yeah.
Like, more to the east, but you're really starting to wedge stuff in there. Yeah, there's just not a lot of space left.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what they found in Austin as well, which is what, you know, it was right. like... What was available was like the parks, and Austin said, no, we're not giving you our parks.
What's a standard stadium like these days for soccer? What's the going thing?
When you say...
If the Crew Stadium is dated and
sure.
kind of bare bones, what are we talking about is more typical being built these days?
A lot of stadiums have partial roofs. They've got, you know, different types of seating rather than just metal bleachers.
Yeah.
They've got one of the things that a lot of stadiums are really focusing on now is like fan environment, like the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So they put in like stands that are meant for standing, where the, you know, the supporters groups like Morgan and others, you know, can actually go and stand the whole time, and it makes sense because they're not standing on seats.
Right.
They've got, as your economist mentioned, luxury boxes that can make some more revenue, better amenities. I think you probably could figure out ways to get better food and stuff in Mafre, but I don't think a lot of that infrastructure is there already. So, you know, just having the ability for like, you know, smaller restaurants and stuff to be on premises, things like that. Just all that, you know, all that stuff that isn't necessarily, you know, necessary, I guess, but
to play the game.
Right.
But yeah.
That makes for a better, you know, fan experience, if you will.
Morgan Hughes, do you think a bigger, better, fancier stadium will attract more interest just from casual fans or people who just are looking for something to do?
Well, I think...
Does it make a difference?
I think a bright, shiny, new object always draws more attention, whether you're driving down the street in your car or you're a soccer fan in a market. But I'll say this of Mafre Stadium. It was the first soccer-specific stadium in the league. So we always felt, as Save the Crew, that we were being unfairly judged for being the foundation upon which the entire league was built, which is why respect your roots. And if it can happen to us, it can happen to you, it can happen to anybody, kind of was our mantra. You know, that place is holy ground in American
yeah.
soccer, perhaps the most holy of all, the holiest of all grounds. I love that place. And when they built it, they didn't know what they didn't know. And so everything that has been built since, every single thing in Major League Soccer has the great, you know, fortune of looking to the past and going, what did the pioneers do that we can maybe improve upon? We never liked that we were being almost destroyed for it. And it, you know, it's not okay to do that to the foundation of your building, your league, your community, what have you.
Morgan Hughes, thanks for joining us again, and congratulations so far on what looks like success in keeping the Crew in Columbus.
Thank you. It's been pretty dang cool. The future is bright.
Morgan Hughes, he's leader of the local Save the Crew movement. Also, Cindy Widener, editor for Curbed Austin. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate your input.
Yes, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
And Andrew King, a reporter, covers soccer for The Athletic. Thanks for joining us today.
Anytime. Thanks.
And thanks, everybody else, for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.